faster than a speeding bullet. Batman made a strange discovery. Briefly, they were subjected to sound in the higher frequencies and they fainted. And now, back to the adventures.
Hey everybody, welcome to How to Read Comics, the podcast where we answer all those questions your nerd pride is too embarrassed to ask. I am Nick, your comic book newbie, and with me today is my friend Rich.
Hey, hello. How's
it going?
Great.
The tables have turned a little bit. We kicked Jason out because he just knows too much about comics.
Mm-hmm.
And we said, you know what, Mr. I know everything about superheroes. We're going to talk about a comic book that has nothing to do with superheroes.
That's right.
And we're going to talk about it, not you. So,
that's right.
Jason will be with us again someday. But for now, you've got us. And today, like I said, we're not going to talk about superheroes. We're going to talk about a comic book that kind of started our comic book reading career.
Yeah.
Do you call it a career?
It still continues. It maintains it.
Yes. It's an ongoing comic series that we've mentioned briefly before called Paper Girls.
Mm-hmm.
It's an independent comic. It's a great read. And I brought Rich on because we both kind of dove into this comic book when we first started reading comics about a year ago. So I wanted him to come on and talk and give his two cents on it. But before we dive right in, a little background. Rich and I have been friends for almost 12, maybe 13 years.
Yep.
And I was trying to think of something I could ask him that I wouldn't have, I don't know about him.
Huh.
And in spirit of Paper Girls, I didn't know, I don't know.
Yeah.
What was your first job?
Oh.
Did you actually have a paper route?
I never had a paper route. My friend CJ Hanley had the only kid I ever knew that had a paper route. My first job, I was an EMT, not an EMT. I was a lifeguard at a wading pool. So every day I would fill up this foot and a half deep wading pool, and every evening I would drain it. It was at University Park in Eugene, Oregon. It was an awesome job.
Nice.
I was 14.
That's very, very much in line with a comic book like this. It
yes.
makes me think of
yes.
Stand By Me.
Yes.
But instead of a hot, inaccessible teenager lady.
You had me.
You had Richard instead.
It's very curly haired.
He's very hot, just in a different kind
eating.
Of way.
I do sweat a lot.
So besides your very awesome lifeguarding
yes.
job.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about what you've been doing recently as far as comic book reading goes.
I just finished Why the Last Man, which is a Brian Vonnen comic, so we'll talk about a lot about him today.
Mm-hmm.
I'm reading Universal Wars. Yeah, Universal War One, which is an interesting comic. My kind of number one is Paper Girls. So I'm really excited to talk about it because I love so much about this comic. And I started out reading Calvin and Hobbes as a kid.
Yeah.
And I think you and I both kind of discovered comic books with The Killing Joke and City of Owls and this Paper Girls.
Yeah. So Paper Girls is an independent, what they would call an independent comic.
Yeah.
Doesn't follow the major superhero storylines of Marvel and DC, published by Image Comics. And I've been reading as many superhero comics as I can to keep up with Jason normally on this podcast.
Yeah, sure.
But my first love is like independent stories and stories that aren't necessarily about superheroes, but
kind of Peter Pan's or Faust and that sort of.
Just I like the more not to say that superhero comics aren't creative, but I love the creative part that this the creative world that this medium of comic books provides for people. This great platform for people to tell stories that they can't get on TV or get made a movie or sit down and write a huge novel about. So this is kind of my first love when it comes to comic books as well.
Cool.
But let's talk a little bit about the artists that put this great comic book together. And then we'll dive into plot and summary, stuff like
awesome.
That. So just a spoiler warning, we are going to increasingly get a little bit more spoiler-ish as we move on. So if you haven't read Paper Girls, what we're mainly going to be talking about today is Paper Girls issues 1 through 5. You can pick that up in a trade paperback. It's fairly widely available. I believe it was published back in 2000, 2015, late 2015. Yeah. So it's been out for a little while, but it is on the every comic book shop's top list of comics in the last.
They just issue 18 just came out, so issue 19 will be June.
Perfect. So go out and read that. Read 1 through 5 and you'll know what we're talking about. But go ahead and read the whole series. You can catch up pretty quick. It should all be readily available for you. So when it comes to comic books, some people love the writing in comic books. Some people love the art. For me personally, it's the art does it for me first, and then the reading sucks me in. So let's talk about Paper Girls artist, number one prime artist, Cliff Chang.
I can't get enough of so I love the art in this, and I really love the art in Wonder Woman. Cliff Chang did both. I mean, the drawings themselves. There's something about his style. He uses those heavy dark lines.
It's a great mix of realistic and simplistic.
Yeah.
He's got just a really great hand at being able to include just enough detail to make the people different, giving them different characteristics, and the backgrounds, giving them just enough detail to where you're like, I get that. I like that, but it's still kind of iconic at the same time. It's not insanely detailed, but it's not featureless.
Right.
Those dark crisp lines I love too. And it just got a really great style to it. It's a great aesthetic. I know you've read a couple of interviews and videos of Cliff. Yeah. Does he talk about that? Has he talked about that?
He does. I think one thing I saw, it might have been an interview or question or something, was they were talking about how he will like the eyebrows and eyes in some panels, instead of penning the eyes and filling them with color, the eye will just be a black dot set against the brow.
Yeah.
And there, right there on that page you're looking at.
Yeah.
It conveys emotion, I think, in a really clear way for not being as detailed as it might otherwise be.
Right.
It's, I don't know, I don't know much about comics, but what it kind of, his style kind of reminds me of is Bill Watterson's Calvin and Hobbes. Whenever he would draw, like, he would draw things, not necessarily Calvin, like Calvin would be flying a space, not a spaceship, a fighter jet.
Like when he got in his dreamscapes, daydream, that's a really great representation of what Cliff Chang's art is.
Right,
it's just always the dream sequences of Calvin Holmes.
Which is, I mean, those are some of my favorite drawings of all time. For me, I think I really love the art in this. The drawings themselves, I really love. For me, I think it's the color added onto the drawings. So Matt Wilson's the colorist. He also did the coloring for Cliff Chang's Wonder Woman series. The tones are sort of 1980s tones in Paper Girls, which fits the era, but somehow they're not necessarily like overblown or overused. There's lots of muted tones in addition.
Yeah, it's like a muted neon.
Yeah, muted neon.
So you get that kind of neon glow that you would kind of think of 1980s.
Yeah.
Which is that this takes place in 1988. We'll talk more about that later, but, you get kind of, a great contrast of the time that you're in plus the story that's being told, in a way that's not just natural colors. Yeah. Like you've got like lots of, like
vibrant pink
and backgrounds, and purple skies teal paneling in a kitchen.
So well.
And, really makes things pop. You've got action sequences that kind of evoke like a classic Silver Age comic of, you know, like your big pows and kablams, and you get those pops of color. So it's a good mix of realistic with thematic.
Yeah.
You know, getting it to be like the time or like the emotion, but not realistic really. But
I think there's a splash page in one of the episodes or in one of the issues where they go back in time, and it's just, I think it's maybe Tiffany, one of the characters, she's sitting in this space capsule, and it's the way the colors, it's like almost solid color behind her. Mm-hmm. If I had that printed as a, you know, 18-inch print on my wall, I would move it around from room to room because they're just such pretty colors on such wonderful drawings. Here's some interesting. So another Cliff Chang, not to jump back to him, but I read one interview. He's talking about how it's been a struggle drawing 1988 as opposed to just drawing the 1980s.
Hmm.
Instead of drawing all the cliches, modifying the world so it's the 1980s, or when they end up in the year 2000, drawing the year 2000 has been a challenge. What was your impression of the art? Does it seem to fit the period of time?
Yeah, you know, when it and that's something I was going to address too, is I don't know how much of an expert I can be on 1988 because I was 2 years old.
Same.
Right. Right. So why does this feel right?
Right.
Even though I don't really have
right
the right perspective to say that it's right.
Sure.
And it's just like Stranger Things. Why does Stranger Things
right
feel like it's so right? With Stranger Things, you've got a lot of different things going on. You've got a team of historians of the 80s, like really working to make sure, and you've got directors that really want it to be like picture perfect, accurate to the time. When you're drawing your own world, you got to kind of do that yourself, I'm guessing. But for whatever reason, both with Stranger Things and with Paper Girls and with some of the other stuff that has been coming out content wise lately, that it's trying to recreate that 1980s time period, this feels right enough for me. Like you said, when they get to the year 2000, I have more to say on the year 2000 because I was more aware, more
cognizant,
I'm more aware in the year 2000. That felt pretty good. That felt pretty right. I don't know what about it does that, but it does.
It's a good question. You know, I think of like, well, because we're the same age, I think of pictures of my parents from the 1980s. Yeah. I think of my parents' yearbooks from 1978-1980. What is interesting, the interview with Cliff Chang that I read, he was saying that he's even like worried about it looking not 1988. So his concern is, you know, wanting to be as specific to that year as possible. So 1980, I think he was describing 1984 is not the same as 1988.
Gotcha.
So apparently he has a yearbook of his from middle school from 1988 that he was referencing for
his source content
of his own.
Yeah. That's awesome. Cause, while I probably couldn't pick out the differences between 84 and 88,
those subtleties,
it's probably the fact that he's paid so much attention to keeping it 1988 that it actually, that's what makes it work.
Right.
If it was a mismatch, then we'd be like, oh, this is
right.
Something doesn't feel right about this. So, that kind of madness probably makes sense to be able to do that. So cool. Yeah. The art's great in this. It's good to know that we've got an artist that's really, really paying attention to the details and, still, being able to push a really great story forward with some really great art. A comic book isn't just pretty pictures. It's pretty words.
Yes.
Maybe not pretty words, but words move the story.
Yeah.
And the words and story in this comic come from Brian K. Vaughan, who is a fairly prolific comic book writer. He's won a few awards.
Yes, he has.
I couldn't name those for you verbatim, but he is a very well awarded comic book writer. Probably best known for, well, Paper Girls. He's pretty well known for Saga.
Yeah.
And then one of your personal favorites, other than Paper Girls, is Why the Last Man.
Excellent. I just finished. Well worth reading.
But before we talk about the author, we probably should talk a little bit more about the story.
Sure.
But the story takes place, like we've just been talking about, in 1988.
In Cleveland.
In Cleveland, Ohio.
I've spent a fair amount of time in Cleveland.
You have?
Yeah.
That's right.
In Shaker Heights. You might say Cleveland is the reason I'm cool.
Is that what they say in Cleveland? Is that what they told you in Cleveland?
That's what Kid Cudi has to say about Cleveland.
Oh, it's my rap star over here.
Yeah. I mean, it seems legit. The thing I remember about being a kid in Cleveland is Cleveland just going on forever and ever and ever. And now you get the same impression in this. It's just, yeah, there's like endless suburbia for them to run around in.
Yeah. It's four girls,
yeah,
in Cleveland, Ohio.
Yeah.
That team up to, I love the conceit, yes, of this comic in the first place. This was brilliant. You've got four paper girls that normally have their own routes.
Yeah.
Doing their own thing. But they team up for one night, one morning.
Yeah.
It's the morning after Halloween. Yeah. And they team up to do their routes together because all the scuzzy teenagers are still out,
right,
causing bullies a ruck at 4 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. All the bullies. So they team up to do their paper routes together. And that's kind of how we get the team assembled, is that you've got four, yeah, girls out against the world.
Which that immediately hooked me. I love, yeah, the story in a comic book. That's the thing that keeps me coming back. And I was just immediately, this notion of these four, you know, middle school girls, just it's just such a departure from the other comics that I had read prior, and certainly a departure from the, you know, the classic Marvel universe. There's nothing like, this is the opposite of Batman.
Yeah. Quite
truly. And it works so well.
Yeah, it's a great way to break the norm of comic, right, books and get you into a story that doesn't revolve around lasers coming out of your fingertips,
yeah,
or,
yeah, being super in some
being
way.
Super in any way. You can be,
yeah,
ordinary and still have a crazy adventure ahead of you. Yeah. So the story starts out with them getting out on their paper routes, and seemingly the world is coming to an end.
Yeah, world falling apart.
World starts falling apart.
It certainly, you know, I think that it's not uncommon for comic books to sort of throw you in the beginning. You don't really know what's going on. Maybe the characters themselves don't know what's going on. What I like about Paper Girls, not only do the characters not really know what's going on, but like we just said, they're not super. So they don't have magic weapons or magic computers that can figure out how or where or what they should be doing. Mm-hmm.
They're just relying on themselves.
They're relying on themselves, yeah, and each other. And, mm-hmm, and that, I think, is an interesting thing in and of itself.
Yeah. So the team is made up of Aaron, Tiffany, yeah, KJ,
yeah,
and Mackenzie,
yeah.
They each have kind of their own special,
right,
power.
Do you have your favorite?
I don't know if I have my I like Tiffany's story arc,
yeah,
a lot, because she kind of comes on slowly,
yeah,
and kind of plays in the background a little bit, but she's kind of one of the voices of reason.
Yeah.
Everybody else kind of goes off the handle,
yeah,
except for her.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of funny that she's the one doing that. She's the gamer of them all, which,
yeah,
is, I liked.
Yeah.
I kind of just like her story.
Yeah.
So who's your favorite out of the four?
I mean, I really like KJ. She definitely plays a bigger role, I think, in it's like issues 12, 13, 14, 15. Mm-hmm. She's the one with the like field hockey stick that cruises around. She kind of stands up for Aaron when she's first introduced. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right, because Aaron's the new girl to
Aaron's
the group.
The new girl to the group.
She had just gotten her paper route earlier in the year, and is new to town, Stony Stream, the other girls are they're very inclusive of her.
Yeah.
This bond of being a paper girl in the first place has got her in the club, so to speak. But they all stand up for her. Some of them have their questions about her, but as far as new girl goes, she's brought in pretty quickly. Yeah, the four of them get together and head out into the early morning of November 1st, 1988. The question I thought of when I'm at this point when I'm reading through is like, what if this story wasn't called Paper Girls and it was called Paper Boys?
Right.
And it was four boys doing this.
Right.
You know, that's why I think I like the conceit of this, yeah, comic book so much, where they ride out as a team. You know, boys may not have done this,
yeah,
or Would they have rode together? It would be a totally different thing.
It would be a different thing. I don't see myself continuing to read it if it's Paperboys. I see, just like maybe Peter Panzerfaust, read the first five maybe issues and then just kind of burn out on it, because that story and perspective has been told so many times. This is much more interesting.
Yeah, you've got a couple different levels to it, because, you know, ever since probably since Newsies, right? It's been paper boys hawking newspapers in their neighborhoods and on the street corners. And so, number one, you've got a team of paper girls just, you know, making extra cash. And there's just something endearing about it. And you already feel good at what they're doing. You're interested because you feel like they're doing something for girls their age that is out of the norm. Not just because they're girls, but just they have a job and they're working hard and they're trying to earn extra money. So you got that level to it. And then when you get a group of them together, it's not like this macho thing. It's like I said, we said earlier, it's just like a practical thing. They're just like, they're just smarter about it.
Well, and I think the boys going on adventure and boys having an adventure has just been, that story has really been told, which is fine. I think it's for the reader here in Paper Girls. It just explores a bunch of dynamics that we haven't ever, I certainly don't think I've seen.
And Jason also has a lot of great recommendations for strong female leads in comic books. And we'll be sure to talk about that in future podcasts. But there are definitely not as many as strong male lead comics. So this is a great one to kind of get that perspective. What's also interesting is you've got a comic book about girls written by two boys.
I was thinking about that.
So, you know, as far as, is this accurate? I, my wife read a little bit of this.
Okay.
And she's like, that is not how 12-year-old girls think. So I, you know, it is a comic, but she admitted to, like, but you know, this isn't a normal story. This isn't so it's a little bit of both, but you know,
it's interesting. I mean, they talk about, they kind of dive into, you know, I think in one of the later issues, maybe KJ or Tiffany has her first period, which is kind of an interesting thing for a guy to write.
Yeah.
I'm glad he did.
I'm glad he did. He left it all in. I mean, he's,
it's all on the table.
It's all on the table. It is a, you can't have a coming of age story. Without love and relationships and figuring out your maturing body. You know, it's definitely approached differently with having guys write this. But, you know, I'm sure they spent a lot of good time talking with the women in their lives and finding out, you know,
what was that like?
How should we write this? How can we make this book about, this comic book about girls growing up in the 80s
and being teenagers
make it real and make it represent girls everywhere at any time. I mean, and that's what this book really is. Not to mention, we're going to talk about time traveling, but this book, when you're not talking about time traveling and futuristic technology and time machines,
war that's going on,
you're talking about a true coming of age story, like girls growing up.
And deals with some dark topics.
Those are the two. Those are the two things that are going on. Sci-fi and then girls growing up.
And I
think it's a great dichotomy of ideas. Both very important. In different ways. Or not important, but serious. Both serious topics in different ways. So there's also a very strange language that these teenagers from the future speak. And it's written in these like hieroglyphics that Brian K. Vaughan does. I took the time to translate that.
Did you?
Alphabet? Yeah. It's right here.
Oh. Whoa. Whoa. How'd you come up with this?
When you get the original single issues of this comic book, at the back of each of the issues, they have like their letters segment, and they had a write-in contest to see if you could translate the language. And so I took it upon myself to try and do it. It wasn't too difficult because you could pick out a few words that it had to be like this word or something like that. And then you just kind of build off from there. But it's come in handy because a lot of there's a few chunks in this book that you don't know what the people are saying because they're written in hieroglyphics. One of the other interesting things is that in the beginning of issues 2, 3, 4, and 5, there's like a little part of like, I guess it's a poem. And when you translate it, it reads, nostalgia is death. Death is forever. Forever is now. Now is gone.
Wow. Interesting. So
a little Easter egg for you there.
Again,
you've got this story of time traveling, and I guess we should probably dig into that a little bit deeper. The what the girls end up running into is these teenagers from the future,
right?
Who were just, you know, time traveling for fun, basically to scrap up old technology that they sell in the future. And then, but on their tails are the adults of the future that come barreling down on them, and the paper girls get stuck in the middle of all this. And in later issues, it starts to come out there is a war between the adults of the future and the teens of the future. The teenagers from the future and the girls, they have something in common, and the biggest thing that I feel like they have in common is that they have a better sense of what's going on than any of the adults in Paper Girls. They have a better sense of just living life in a forward momentum, like not worrying about tomorrow or what the consequences of things are, which are most children in general, not worrying about consequences necessarily. But they do it in such a way that they're trying to just do good in the world, where the adults in this book are always looking backwards and trying to figure out what is what the best way of doing something or how to go back and change things to where it'll turn out better for them later. Or I don't know. Did you pick up on that at all? Did you pick up on?
So that's touched on in issues, I think 17 and 18, they sort of start to explain where that tension has come from. This notion that if you can travel through time, you could go back in time and prevent terrible atrocities from occurring. And so there's one group that wants to do that, and there's another group that says no, leave time as it was. Just because we can explore past and present doesn't mean we should.
That's probably where that nostalgia is death is coming from. Don't worry about yesterday, which is really interesting that they included that line in there hidden in hieroglyphics. Nostalgia is death, when this book is like a nostalgic book. It's in 1988. So why Rich then? Is this one of your number one comic book picks? Like, what, now that we've kind of talked about, you know, why the art was great, you know, some of the story and kind of interesting things that have happened in the story, and what sticks with you as far as when you put this book down and walk away from it, you go, that was awesome. I love that.
Well, so the relationship between the four girls. The fact that it's four girls out on this adventure and not four boys or four superheroes. The sort of unanswered questions, which there are a lot of, you know, why have all these people suddenly arrived on Earth? Why have they been cast backwards into the past and now forwards into the future? Which, you know, future for them is 2016. I think for me, I want, you know, I'm excited about the resolution of those questions. I'm also just really looking forward to seeing how Brian writes these stories, and writes these relationships. And of course, you know, for me, especially, I love getting the individual issues because the cover art is always spectacular. And there will be at some point a splash page that's just spectacular. And that maybe alone will keep me buying them, which goes against a little bit what I was saying earlier. I really do love a good story in a comic book, but, between Cliff and Matt Wilson, the art in this is just amazing.
So even if they took away the time traveling and the sci-fi, would you read this book?
Yeah, I would.
I think because that's what you're kind of getting towards is like this book is about four girls and you're interested in them. If you're trying to figure out how this time travel thing works, it's not going to be answered.
No, you're going to be disappointed.
It is not. And that's what it's kind of hard to talk about on a podcast without showing you the books and like having you read through them. But if you've read any of these, you'll learn pretty quick that you're not going to learn much about what the heck is actually going on. But the thing that keeps you coming back is the interactions between these girls with one another, like how the different pairs of them kind of team up and like have each other's back and have different kind of abilities or not abilities is the wrong word, but
skills
or just character traits that just make them really interesting individuals. But like I said, if you're going to try and figure out the sci-fi of this story, you're just not going to.
And there are a lot of sci-fi comics. And if you were to ask me what my favorite sci-fi comic is, I don't know that Paper Girls would come to mind. But if you were to ask me what my favorite comic is, I would say Paper Girls. And I think it's because of those interactions and relationships and this perspective.
Yeah. They're just fun. Yeah. They're just fun. You've got Mac, kind of the lead girl in this story. She's like holding her own with the police and like telling them off. And then your favorite KJ is like just runs around with a field hockey stick, like I'm gonna break someone's nose if they come stepping.
I mean, she kills a guy. Yeah, it's pretty serious.
She's intense.
Yeah, it's pretty serious.
I mean, not that she's an intense person, but she's got intense stuff going on.
Yeah, and it's just this intense moment.
But it's not about the action part of that.
No,
it's about the reaction.
Yeah, the resolution to that.
So. Yeah, the big things here is just reading a story about kids being independent, kids doing the right thing, and then trying to solve a mystery but also trying to solve a mystery without, you know, Batman's sense of detective work or Superman's X-ray vision or anything like that. You know, they're just kids, and it makes you kind of feel good because there's probably been a time in your life where you're trying to figure something out and it felt like the world was crashing down on you, but these girls literally have the world crashing down on them and they're still trying to grow up and still trying to figure out what's going on. So, a comic book, a coming of age comic book with time traveling and dinosaurs,
pterodactyls.
We really appreciate you guys listening.
Thank you.
I hope we've encouraged you to go out and read this if you haven't. If you did read it, I hope you enjoyed the discussion. But if you have any questions or want to hear more from us or any of our sister podcasts on the Overthink Network, just come over and visit us at overthinkpod.com.
I thought you were going to invite them to your house.
Yeah, come over to my house. Come over to the garage here, and we'll sit and chat. Honestly, if you want to, come on over. Let's do it. You can pick up Paper Girls in any of your comic book stores. So go visit. Don't buy this on Amazon unless you absolutely have to. Go down and visit your local comic book shop.
Sure.
Talk with the folks behind the counter and tell them you're interested in Paper Girls, and they'll get excited.
Yeah.
Because they probably just are excited as we are about it.
Yeah.
And if they're not, they can call me.
That's right.
They can call Rich.
I'll prescribe them some Zoloft. They'll get a boost.
We'll prescribe them some of our left and right
fists. That too. Yeah, violence.
Anyway, again, thank you so much for listening. And we will talk to you guys next time.
Yeah.
See you later.
Bye.